international detective dragons from outer space.
And welcome, or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Anum 5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 38. The scheduled topic for this episode is, will artificial intelligence created by human beings ever become self-aware? If no, how could we prove it? If yes, how could we prove that? We'll hear emails from the Stealth Geek, James, Nerdcore Steve. This will also be an episode of Discovery and Revelations regarding Anum 5, because this podcast is coming to you straight from Schrodinger's box. Full explanations and the rest of the episode follow after this.
Will you please pay some attention to what's going on here?
I say, McNaughton, who is this chap always butting into our conversation? Quite crude.
Oh, Payne, he's just the quiz master, yes, but don't let him bother you.
Must he keep talking all the time? It just isn't cricket.
You two guys want to play cricket. Why don't you go to Central Park?
Right.
I say, McNaughton, isn't there some place around here where we can go to have some privacy?
I could tell you both where you could go.
Never mind, Mr. Sheldon.
Only there's sailors in the house.
All right,
where have I been? What's been going on? What happened? It's been more than 4 weeks, Anum. What's the deal? How could you disappear for an entire month? Well, I said in the intro this was going to be a podcast that included revelations. I've been discovering something about myself over the past month. I have discovered that I am a delicate hothouse flower. I don't know how to elaborate on that in the right order, but I'll give it a try. The end of April, Friday, April 27th, marked 1 year, the 1 year anniversary of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Happy birthday to us. Yes, us, because it is our show. Well, about a month before that was the last podcast posting, and that was on April 1st, and there was no joke about it. It just happened to be the day that I was able to get it all edited and put together. Yeah, that was April 1st. And it was interesting. It's interesting to me that the core topic for that episode was the role of the cosmic dice and how it can change lives. Well, it didn't become interesting until a few days later, April 3rd. On April 3rd, I was informed that my job and my company was about to disappear in 3 days. Now, of course, there are far, far worse things that can happen than losing your job. But I gotta tell you, folks, I've been working for Paper Mill Playhouse. Yes, that's who I work for, Paper Mill Playhouse. They own Paper Mill Scenic, which is the shop warehouse that I've been podcasting from, or at least almost exclusively during the first 20 or so episodes. And where I'm podcasting from now, Paper Mill Scenic in Edison, New Jersey. The Paper Mill Playhouse, after 69 years of operation, as I record this, is in danger of closing its doors forever. It's a non-profit organization, but it is very large, and it is the State Theater of New Jersey. And I've worked for them, as I said, for 15 years, the past 12 of which I've been their warehouse manager. So being told that I was about to lose my job was a bit of a shock. I found it a little hard to take, and I'm confessing to you now that as an emotional and psychological wimp, it took the wind right out of my sails. It took the tuck right out of me. It knocked away all my plumb, vim, and vigor. And when I say this podcast is coming to you from Schrodinger's box, I'm not kidding. Let me explain. And for those of you that are fully aware of the Schrodinger's cat exercise, the Schrodinger's cat theoretical experiment, I apologize. I know you've heard it 1,000 times and you're thoroughly familiar with it, but I'm going to go over it here one more time for the benefit of those who haven't. Schrodinger's cat was developed as a thought experiment. And in the experiment, you take a live cat, place it in a soundproof box, close the lid of the box, and inside the box is a device that will have an exactly 50-50 chance of killing the animal or doing nothing when you flick a switch on the outside of the box. Exactly, 50-50. It releases a gas or combines some chemicals to make a poison, something or other, some crap that kills the animal. The idea behind it being, as Schrodinger was trying to posit, is that once that switch is flicked and you've flipped that 50-50 coin, the cat is no longer alive and no longer dead. It becomes a waveform of probability. And it is the act of opening the lid of the box to finally discover whether the cat was killed or not when the experimentor collapses that waveform of probability and learns the fact. Well, on April 3rd, Paper Mill Playhouse went public and announced that they were in a financial crisis and were in danger of closing their doors within about 3 days. Now, since then, they have been operating from week to week. And all of the employees of the paper mill, including those of us here down in Edison in the warehouse scene shop that they own, have been told, we've got enough money now through fundraising and emergency measures to operate another week. This we have been told since April 3rd. This is, I'm recording this on May 1st. The situation hasn't changed. We've been functioning like the cat in the box, and the lid doesn't get opened until Friday of each week when we're told whether we'll have a job the following week or not. Yep, worse things have happened. But I've discovered that perhaps I've associated my identity with what I do. Like the line from Sunday in the Park with George, I am what I do, which you always knew. I don't know. I don't know that I am what I do. I just know that for 15 years I've worked for this company. I started when I was 32. I'm 47 now. The idea of sailing out into the job market, 3 years shy of 50, I'll flat out admit, it scared the crap out of me then, and it scares me now. I wouldn't call myself exactly unemployable, but I've discovered that I really do enjoy being in a rut. It's predictable. It's safe. There's a predictable, steady income. And it was a reasonably good income, considering my age and how long I've been at this. So that's what happened for the month of April. I just did not have the inclination, the energy. I didn't have the will to hit record. So I'm asking you, as the listeners, to do two things. A, forgive me for disappearing for an entire month. And B, send in whatever suggestions you may have as to how I might become self-employed. I don't relish the idea of finding another job only to have it yanked out from under me by some group of people in suits in another city deciding that some restructuring needs to take place. I don't want to be another statistic of downsizing at another location. I'm starting to see the merits. Emotionally, I'm starting to value the merits of being self-employed, of having a little bit more control. It's a frightening aspect, but I don't actually want to go through another month like the month I've just had. So, yeah, I'm a wimp. What was the other Oh, those are the two things. Sorry for being late, and what do you think? Hot dog stand? Sell balloons at fairs? Oh, I've got other skills, but there it is. There it is. I apologize. As for the... Oh, and I'm sorry about this, too. I mean, I must have a lot of nerve to ask you as listeners to send anything in when I had you sending in mottos and Latin phrases and things for, well, a month at least, maybe even more than a month, and I did nothing with it. I apologize for that, too. I completely, absolutely dropped the ball on that one. I do have intentions of producing that graphic online to be downloaded, the IDDFOS ID card, but I'm going to have to post some kind of a starting thread on the forum to recover what all those were, because I backed up all those emails into a series of text files that I did full searches on, and it seems that the word phrase, Latin, motto, ID card, IDDFOS motto, none of those led me to the phrases that you sent in. I only found two of them, and I know I got more than that because I printed them out and I read them on the show. So I'm probably going to end up doing that. Future of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, I have no intention of pod fading. I have no intention of allowing this show to go under. It is going to continue. More episodes will come out. As a matter of fact, one of the things I've done is purchase server space for Ventrilo. What does that mean? Well, Ventrilo is, as you may already know, is a communications software that gamers use to communicate with each other when they're in-game. It works in World of Warcraft. I've seen it used. Mrs. Anon 5 does it all the time. And my server space that I purchased will allow up to 10 people to be talking to each other at once. So that, in combination with contacting other podcasters whom I would like very much to interview, will mean some interesting future content for future shows. IDDFOS is alive and strong and will continue. As a matter of fact, if they open the lid of the box at the end of this week and tell us that the cat is dead, well, hell, I'll have more time to podcast, won't I? So what about my situation? What do you find out? What other revelation about this, aside from the fact that I work for Paper Mill Playhouse? I only say that so that you can do a Google search, if you care to, on Paper Mill Playhouse, or go to papermillplayhouse.org and see that what I'm talking about is in fact the case. And my name is Mark Panero. Is this important? No, I never considered it important. As a matter of fact, the reason I use Anim 5 is because I don't particularly like the name Mark Panero. I prefer the handle Anim 5. And I've always attempted pretty much to keep my online dealings and interactions as online as possible. And that's pretty much the result of some... Pretty much as a result of some bad stalking experiences that I had in at the end of the 90s and the beginning of the 2000s. And my mistake there was that I was nice to some people who probably weren't used to being nice to. Well, that's just what I do, you know. You're nice to people that you meet online. No need to be nasty. But they seemed to be in trouble, and I seemed to be a little naive at the time. At any rate, another revelation that I'll put out here, and it's not going to come as a big shock to anybody, and that is that the novel Hosting the Casimir by C.E. Sales was in fact written many years ago by Mrs. Anim 5. Yes, C.E. Sales, author of Hosting the Casimir, is my wife. She did not want this publicly known. She never had any particular intention of making it publicly known. She wanted the book to sell on its own merits, not because her husband was doing a podcast and could advertise it. And I know this isn't going to come out. This isn't going to come out the way it should, but it deserves to sell on its own because it is a very fine fantasy novel. It's a good story. It's a fun read. If you like fantasy novels, well, here's a thought. In the whole year that IDDFOS has been up and running, I've never asked for a donation. And I think you'll find that in the coming year, possibly years, as far as I can tell, might as well be years. I don't have any intentions of stopping it. I'm going to continue to not ask for donations. But if you like fantasy novels, and you'd like a good story and a good read, it's the first of a trilogy. We can't get books 2 and 3 out, of course, until we sell book 1. Give it a try. It is, as I said in the last podcast, available now online conveniently via credit card. If you don't like fantasy novels, please recommend it or point someone in the direction of that page who might. That's as close to asking for a donation that I'm ever going to come. Tough times ahead, but there's plenty worse things that could be going on. There's plenty worse things that could be happening. It just shocked me and took the wind out of me for a good long while there. And I apologize for not giving a heads up of some kind, even on the forums. I should have posted something. I apologize. Okay, so let's get into what's going on for this particular show. What are the things that I have to tell you about or say or mention? Well, changing the subject from oh poor me, and let's see, we've already wished a happy birthday to IDDFOS. I missed my own birthday. I missed the show's own birthday. Oh well. James Doohan. Scotty. A portion of his ashes. As if I read the article right, not all of his ashes, but a portion of his ashes were shot into space. Into a suborbital... What does that mean? It was a suborbital rocket. Does that mean it's going to come crashing down to Earth again? I hope not. I hope it was put in a permanent suborbit, whatever that means. I'll have to look into that further. I met James Doohan about as well as you can meet someone sitting behind a table giving out autographs. Well, I was never an autograph hound. I wasn't interested in the stars. I was interested in the show and the characters, but he was there at the Bicentennial 10, and I had a copy of the Starfleet Technical Manual right there in my hot little hands in 1976, 9 years after the show got canned. He looked very tired, but I got him to sign my Starfleet Technical Manual. And then, of course, we all grew up and started spending our money. All of us who knew that Star Trek was more than what they showed us in 3 years. And we started spending our money and making our voices heard and making it become what it could be in the series of movies and television spin-offs. Godspeed, Scotty. Off up into space. Hope I reach the age of 85. Who did we lose this month, though? Who did we lose in April? April was not a good month, I don't think. We lost Joe Murphy. I never heard a lot of Joe Murphy in podcasts. As a matter of fact, I think what I heard most was on Kick-Ass Mystic Ninja Turtles. But just from what I'm hearing online and in the multiple podcasts that I download, he has certainly had a positive and lasting impression on lots of individuals. And I'm going to put a link to I'm going to put a link in the Kudikadingadungadungs to the memorial fund for Joe Murphy. I did enjoy the back and forth that he shared with his co-hosts on the Kick-Ass Mystic Ninja Turtles. We waved goodbye to Kurt Vonnegut. Kurt Vonnegut, ripe old age of 84, was successful, best-selling, published, studied author when I was 14 years old. Holy crap, that's hanging on for a good long time. Well, his books are more alive and vital than he probably was, even in his later years, though he continued to write. Farewell, Kurt Vonnegut. On a more positive note, Stephen Hawking. Going up and experiencing zero G in that long curved plane flight that simulates no gravity. What must that have been like? A man confined to a wheelchair for 40 years of his life. Wow. Good for him. I hope he gets to do it again and again as often as he wants. If he wants to again. I have a podcast to recommend. Now, we got into massive multiplayer online role-playing games with a concentration on World of Warcraft because that's what I was most familiar with. I took two whole episodes to talk about it and just go on and on about it and not really say a whole hell of a lot, or at least not as much as I could have said in one podcast, and I'll give yourself an example of that, to give yourself an example of the kind of in-depth and very, very insightful observations about online addiction, about World of Warcraft, about the online lifestyle, the metaverse, the direction that online communities and virtual realities are taking. Check out Wowcast. The podcaster's name is Alachia. Absolutely brilliant stuff, particularly episode 26. Her most recent episode. Definitely worth your time to listen. And I'll put a link to that, of course, as well in the Gudikadingadungadungs. And you're going to find a permanent link to that on what's becoming a pretty long list now on the right-hand side of the homepage of IDDFOS. And I found this out today, just today, that there is a video game designed to teach young people Shakespeare. Apparently, a university in Canada has spent a year and $50,000 to develop an online video game. I think it's Flash-based. They tested it on six-year-olds. A video game that's designed to get kids interested and learn about Shakespeare. I tried downloading it actually less than an hour ago. Apparently, I don't think I have the right Flash plugin installed, so I haven't played it yet, but just knowing about it is interesting. There's a downloadable demo, and I'll put the link to that as well in the Gudikadingadungadungs. So, there we are. I'm sorry about the four-week hiatus there. I'll keep you posted and updated as to who I've contacted in terms of other podcasters. One of the things I've got to do is actually figure out how Ventrilo works with my Typefrag 10-user server for Ventrilo and how to set it up. And then, of course, I'm going to have to learn how to record the results when I'm talking to other people. So far as I know, all you need is a microphone plugged into your PC and your speakers on, and you can use it. Supposedly doesn't require one of those headsets, although it supposedly works better with one of those USB headsets with a mic sticking out the side. But I'll let you guys know what's up, and of course if anything gets recorded and I get to interview the people that I want to, there's going to be some more fun and exciting shows. So, we're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we will hear from Dickie the Stealth Geek. Or rather, we'll hear a letter from Dickie the Stealth Geek. Back in a bit.
For what famous producer was the Ziegfeld Theater named?
I like the movies best.
Who cares?
So do I. I went to the movies last night with my old man.
All right.
What a picture.
Yeah.
Charles Boyer was in it. And the way he kissed the leading lady.
Yeah, what way did he kiss her?
Well, I said to my old man, why don't you kiss me like that?
Yeah, what'd your old man say?
He said he would if they'd pay him as much as they paid Boyer.
Okay, just a quick note from Dickie, the Stealth Geek of the Stealth Geek podcast. And you may have been looking for some installments of that particular podcast and haven't found them. Well, he's hanging in there and he's trying. The subject line, the state of the Stealth Geek. Hi, everybody. Since the site's down, the feed's down, I have no hosting and I'm still waiting for my mixer board. And in case you were really interested for some
effed-up reason as to my whereabouts, I've started a Stealth Geek blog. I'll update it every now and again, giving updates to what the hell I'm doing about this whole podcast thing. The URL is, and I will post that URL in the Kutikatingatongatongs. It's http://stealthgeekpodcast.blogspot.com. As for the podcast, I'm going to be getting myself a host that doesn't suck within a week or two. The cast itself is done, believe it or not, so it'll go up the second I have a host. Thanks for sticking with my bloody unreliability, Dickie. Well, Dickie, part of podcasting, as you well know, and as every other podcaster knows, is you're doing it because you want to. Nobody's paying you to do it. The people that listen to it are getting it for free, relatively for free. So you come out with a new episode when you can. And I'm sorry to hear about the equipment problems. And I do know about web hosts that suck. I'm sorry, that reminds me. That reminds me of a recent quote from a Roll Monkeys episode. It was really kind of funny. It was offhand. It came out of nowhere, but it was very funny. Mick Bradley positing a possible alternative podcast called Games You May Actually Have Heard Of, But They Sucked. That was the way he said it. You have to listen to it. I hope you've heard it already. If you haven't, go listen to the most recent installment of The Roll Monkeys. They just did a part one at least of M-Force. Very entertaining. Vivid characters. Prior to that, let's see, another memorable line in a previous Roll Monkeys episode, Chris Hine came out with it, and it's only funny in context, so why am I even repeating it? Oh, I'll repeat it anyway. I'm sorry, I'm going to spoil it for you if you haven't heard it already. See, you should listen to these things in a timely manner when they come out. But he said, you know, bringing a machine gun to a butter knife fight is very unsporting. Geez, it's possible I screwed up that line. Was it machine gun, or did he say something else? Is it gun? Oh, I forget. Made me laugh. Check out the Roll Monkeys. www.harpingmonkey.com. See what's going on. They're a lot of fun. So don't worry about it, Dickie. Come out with it when you can. Everybody that's subscribed, keep subscribed. Keep checking it. It'll be out. I did say I was going to go on to the letter from James. Yes, the letter from James is a response to the subject matter for this show. And the subject line is
The March of the Tin Cans. Hello again, Adam. It's funny you should bring up mindless automatons becoming self-aware as I sit here in the library looking at a jam-packed internet lab with glossy-eyed patrons. In jest, I would argue that it's the machines becoming smarter as we just become dumber. A machine that could point and click its own mouse would be more intelligent than half of the people I see on a daily basis.
Woohoo! Color me bitter. Sorry, no. Color me cynical. Oh, we wouldn't have you any other way. He continues.
As a writer and science fiction fan, I would love to believe that machines can become self-aware. In reality, however, I just don't see it happening. Emotional machines that have been programmed to emulate human responses are just following their own subroutines and algorithms. In other words, it's a mimic, a pale copy of the real thing. That's why people have seemed so put off or feeling odd around the current generation of androids. They can look almost human, but there is just something telling that gives them away. I think it's the animation of the eyes and the small nuances of a person that give them personality. Otherwise, you have a generic face that just looks wooden. For a good pseudo-example of this, look at most attempts to render realistic humans in CGI, in movies and games. They can come close, but it always comes across as looking a bit plastic. I think that it would take machines developing their own individualistic traits before I could begin to believe in true self-awareness. Even if it's something as simple as machine unit 7 takes 0.028 microseconds longer to calculate the 200th value of pi, because it likes to cross-check the highly detailed subroutine X twice. Only by becoming individuals can I see machines becoming self-aware. Otherwise, they're just cookie-cutter programming jobs, rolled off an assembly line, no better than a toaster, or a big-screen television set. Even if machines become self-aware,
they would still lack some of the more indelible things that make us human. Can machines dream, hope, or mourn the loss of a companion or a loved one? I would argue that it's these things, not the ability to convey emotions, that distinguish us. Emotion without that abstraction is just aping the real thing. As to proving or disproving self-awareness in machines, there is always the Turing test, but I'm not sure if it's really fully qualified to meet some of the newest advances. Plus, would the results of an old theory like that stand in a modern court with the expert witnesses and lawyers tearing into anything that might cast doubt on their position? In essence, the proving or disproving would be done by whatever corporation could dump enough money into the judicial system to see their viewpoint victorious. Because, let's face it, these advances will be bought and paid for with corporate money. If it happens in a university, it will be sold to the highest bidder or used by the school as a revenue stream. It is for this exact reason that I don't see human rights for machines becoming an issue. Corporations funded their creation, and they remain property. There will be some who try to make the claim, but until machines themselves take a stand, I don't see much happening on that front. It's far too easy to reprogram a machine to remove undesirable traits, such as disobedience. And self-awareness is only a single backup restore away from being removed or retrograded to a more docile form. Personally, I would be extremely uncomfortable being a biological life form, passing judgment on what is and is not life, given that our own definitions of it are so human-centric that we are naturally and subconsciously biased. Xenophobia, I believe, is hardwired into us. James Stubbs. Thank you, James. Given my current state of mind, which is not all that focused, I don't want to do the disservice of commenting flippantly and instantly on this response. And I can't comment on it in depth because it's a response that I personally would not be capable of writing. It's better than I could come up with. This is one of the reasons why this program, this is one of the reasons why IDDFOS is listener-driven, why the content, your letters, is supposed to be the most important part of the show. It's because it is. Well, that, of course, and trucks driving by. So I'm just going to say thank you extremely much for that response. We're going to go to a break. When we come back from the break, we will hear from Nerdcore Steve. Back in a bit.
We always like to give the old hometown a plug. Would you care to tell us where your hometown is?
Wrightstown, Wisconsin.
Wrightstown, Wisconsin. Right you are. Very good.
Wrightstown, Wisconsin.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, do my homework and call me Little Orphan Annie.
Stop.
You know, I used to work in that town.
You're going to strain your tonsils, some of
you. Yeah, I was a farmer in a candy store.
You were a farmer in a candy store?
Yeah, I used to milk chocolates.
Next up, in response to the topic for episode 38, this from Nerdcore Steve, and the subject line is Robots and Rights. Hi, Anim 5. Thanks for devoting two whole episodes to this topic. Well, that's true. I did say it would be 38 and 39. Well, let's say show 39 is going to depend on whether I get more feedback on this, because the only two emails that I got regarding the topic of artificial intelligence and machines built by humans becoming self-aware or not, the only two responses I got were from James and Nerdcore Steve. Well, if anybody else has anything in particular they want to write in about that has to do with this, great. If I don't hear from anyone else, I think maybe 39 will have to be something else, but we'll see. I apologize. Let me get back to... Let me start reading his letter. Hi, Anim 5. Thanks for devoting two whole episodes to this topic. Here's my attempt at some answers. I hope I don't come off as adversarial. I spent a lot of time debating when I was in college, and I used to argue all the time in forums and chat rooms. But I'm doing my best to break those old habits. Can we prove that a machine is self-aware? I don't think so. I don't think we can even prove this of a human being. The only reason I know that I'm self-aware is from the first-hand experience. I'm just guessing that the rest of you out there are actual people too, instead of just being clever simulations. Maybe someday we'll discover some means of proving sentience, but it would probably require a much greater understanding of consciousness, the brain, physics, and who knows what else than we have now. Maybe we won't be able to make HAL without that kind of understanding, but my fear is that we may be able to make a machine that seems like it might be self-aware before we have any real way of knowing if it really is. I imagine someday that we might have a real robot trial, like Data's in that episode of Star Trek, in which a machine claims to be a person with the same rights and deserving the same treatment as any other human being. The outcome of that trial might depend on how the robot was made. If his brain were not simply a very powerful computer, which, for all of the wonders it can do, is still just a very powerful calculator, but instead built to work more like a human brain, it might be easier to accept him as being a person rather than a device. Even if his brain was built like a computer and his actions were determined by a very complicated decision tree, as in, if a person says hello to you, then say hello back. If he says it sadly, ask what's wrong, and so on. Then it might be easier to conclude that the robot wasn't a person. But what if the robot were to claim that such programming is not so different from the programming a human being receives from his environment and his parents as he grows up? The way I figure it, if we can't really tell for sure that a computer or a robot isn't truly a person rather than a simulation, then we ought to err on the side of caution and treat him the same way we treat a human being. Here's the part where I worry about sounding adversarial. Part of the way you phrased this topic bugs me. Should these intensely complex artificial intelligence engines be endowed with the same human rights currently sought after and defended by today's enlightened societies? It sounds like you're saying that you think rights are granted by some power or other, perhaps by government or society, and that there is some decision to be made as to whether or not to give rights to certain machines. I believe that rights are something you have because you are a person, that it doesn't matter whether or not they are given or not. You have them regardless. I really don't see what difference it would make if a person is made of flesh or silicon. If you are a person, which would mean, among other things, that you are self-aware and have reasoning power, then you have rights. One other thing I'd like to mention on this topic, I remember watching a PBS TV series back in the early 90s called Future Quest, hosted by Jeff Goldblum. Does anybody else remember that show? They had an episode about the future of robotics and what it might mean if a robot were to start asking to be treated like a human being. One person on the show suggested that all you would have to do to avoid this problem was to program the robot to like being a slave. This seems to me to be morally equivalent to genetically engineering a human being with instincts and desires that made him want to be a slave. By the way, the Star Trek episode where Data's status as a person is subject to a hearing is one of my favorites. My other is when the alien probe links with Picard's brain and causes him to live out an entire lifetime in the space of a few minutes. Thanks again for a great show, Nerdcore Steve. Thank you very much, Nerdcore. Yeah, that's one of my favorites too, actually, The Inner Light. Excellent episode. A brilliant example of the long journey condensed into a very short amount of time. Interesting points. Very interesting points. More intelligently put than I could at this point, because I'm going to fall back on my frailty here and wimp out and say that I'm probably going to have a lot more to say about this in episode 39 than I do in this one, because I'm still in the box. And it's affecting me a lot more deeply than it probably should. I'm still in Schrodinger's box and I can't get it out of my brain. And all I can think about is the last time I was... Aside from trucks, all I can think about. Jeez, you'd think after being gone a month I'd come up with an episode that had more audio quality than this same old crap that I talk next to the side of this building that may be closing soon. All I can think about is the last time I was in this predicament, and that was, I was living in a two-room attic apartment that wasn't supposed to be an apartment. I'd even sublet one of the two rooms to some stranger. Some young fella named, I'm not even going to say his name. He was an odd young man. He was a Spartan. He wouldn't buy himself a radio because he didn't consider listening to music to be a productive, enterprise. He had $30,000 in the bank at the age of 23 or something like that. But he was saving to buy a house. A very boring young man. But enough about him. Back then, yes, last time I was unemployed, I was sitting playing on my Amiga 2000 Trial by Fire, the Sierra game. What strikes me about it now, and what I remember most, is that no matter what character you played, whether it was a warrior, or a magic user, or a fighter, or a thief, you'd always start the game session in game time in the morning being served breakfast at whatever inn you happen to be at. And the innkeeper's daughter would come down the stairs with a tray and the game would describe in detail what your breakfast was like. Roast lamb, saffron rice, nectars, just this delectable breakfast. And I'd look at my character as he's eating his breakfast and I'd look over at the table, my little corner of my room where I kept my so-called pantry, and I'd look at the peanut butter and jelly and the jar of instant coffee sitting over there. Yes, my in-game character in a PC game I was playing was eating better than I was. I've got nothing to complain about. I'm the one that decided to take a degree in theater, and making a living wage in theater is unheard of. It is absolutely unheard of. And while I haven't particularly done anything artistic or theatrical by tracking an inventory and managing a warehouse, it's still connected with a business which is the only one I've known since ever. So, yeah, I've got it kind of on the brain, and it makes it difficult to concentrate on some things. But I can't get over the fact that perhaps it's because I have married my identity with what I do. Perhaps it's because of that when the news came out, which by the way was in the form of a newspaper article, nobody wrote us emails. Nobody wrote us any emails saying this is what's up. They went directly to the press. So I had to find out that my company may be closing through a newspaper article. I don't have high hopes that I'm going to be employed next month. They could very well finish out their season. The theater could remain open and have warehouse business to conduct for maybe the next 3 weeks. I don't know. But I do know that a good deal of my energy over the past month, aside from getting over this idea that I've been pronounced dead, that I've got a week to live or some crap like that, because it's not the case. It's a case of employment. It's tough to keep things in perspective. So I've got to work on redefining myself. I've got to come to understand that who I am isn't on a business card. So we'll see how successful I am at that, and we'll see how successful I am at keeping a proper perspective, because there's people in way worse situations. I just flipped out for a month, because I'm a wimp. I'm a delicate hothouse flower. So I've got to spend a little more time advertising and finding other avenues of advertising, hosting the Casimir. And I have a few other plans that are connected with Fantasy Forge Press, because that is the company that Mrs. Annam 5 and I formed in order to publish that book. I discovered early on that it's a lot more expensive to advertise a book than to publish it, and to publish it was no small pile of change either. But I got a few other ideas that will be connected with Fantasy Forge Press, and I'll let you know what those are when they come to fruition and actuality. I promise you, though, I will be contacting other podcasters and attempting to do interviews via Ventrilo. This summer marks the 150th anniversary of the founding of the township of Milburn, and I certainly hope that they don't lose the jewel in their crown during that same year. That would be a shameful, an absolutely shameful thing to happen if they let it happen. And I doubt that they want to, because the theater has raised enough in donations, emergency donations, from the people that go to that theater to keep running an extra 4 weeks. It was 4 weeks ago today that they announced it. This summer marks the 30th anniversary of the release of Star Wars. I recall driving away from the Fox Theater in Union, which is no longer there, of course. One of the last remaining widescreen theaters in New Jersey with Dolby surround sound, 70 millimeter. I wasn't driving, actually. My best friend in high school was driving, and the two of us were just completely psyched up about the movie. We were going to go back and see it a whole bunch of times, flicking switches that weren't there, firing blasters out the window. It was just an exciting new thing. It redefined and raised the bar on science fiction, enabling a whole bunch of quality work to come thereafter. But I'm working with someone who was born that year. Yes, she was born that year. She works in the shop. She and her sister have been in the process of building a house 30 years ago. Holy crap. Well, it's going to be a short episode this time, I'm afraid. That was pretty much as much as I could get out in the time that I have, because when I get home, I just stew a little too much to hit record. I'll get over it. I don't know what this... this episode's in old-time radio show is going to be, and I don't know what the music's going to be, but they will be included. So here's the short snippet of whatever show I pick out, and I hope you enjoy it. Back in a bit.
Well, Palmer, after I left school, I went to sea. Now, who am I?
Oh, that's easy. You're Tom Howard.
I'm Tom Howard. Wait a minute, I know I'm Tom Howard, but right now I'm someone else.
Well, I hope the change is an improvement.
Who are you now? What's your first name, honey?
Ah, cut it out. Look, I'll give you another clue. One day, while playing with an egg, I decided the world was round. Now, who am I?
He still doesn't know who he is. Why don't you call up the Bureau of Missing Persons?
First he loses a tiger, now he's lost himself.
Well, what can you expect from a man who goes around playing with eggs? And the price of eggs today. You know what I paid for eggs today? 69 cents a dozen.
All right.
69 cents a dozen.
Okay, you paid
for it. Almost 5 cents each.
Okay.
69 cents a dozen.
Terrible.
Well, I mean, Miss McConnell, you know, after all, that's not so expensive. Not when you consider that an egg is a whole day's work for a chicken.
A whole day.
That's right. And the superintendent has to eat, too.
Who's the superintendent?
The rooster.
Well, you three misspent lives, pay attention here. As I said before, after deciding the world was round, I went to Spain and I met Queen Isabella.
You did? Tell me, how is the old girl?
She is. I told the Queen I wanted some ships. I didn't get the ships, but the Queen believed in me, so what did she do?
She taught you how to swim.
She pawned all her jewels, gave me the money to buy ships so I could discover America. Now, who am I?
All those ships and he still lost.
Let me make it simple. Who discovered America?
Well, don't look at me. I've been out of town.
I hope that was good. I imagine it was. I wouldn't have picked it out otherwise. I hope the show is good. Same thing. Not much commentary to fill in between now and when the music should start, because this is the end of episode 38. I'm looking forward to episodes 39, 40, etc. Hopefully without the kind of break that I so rudely subjected everyone who listens to this podcast to. Hope I didn't lose too many listeners by disappearing for a month. But here's a bit of music. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll say my goodbyes on the opposite side.
very refreshing.
And so we reach the end of episode 38. My real name? Not important. What's going on in my life personally? Equally unimportant, except to offer some kind of an explanation for having disappeared for a month and garner some understanding, if I may, from you folks. If this particular episode, maybe even episode 39, fall below standard, I hope I've got enough gumption, chutzpah, vim and vigor to make it a better episode than this one, and I'll strive to do that. I've already got a piece of research in mind that has to do with that very thing. A continuation of the subject matter, artificial intelligence and self-awareness. Anything in addition that you'd care to write in about it? The anthropomorphization of mechanical objects? I mean, we do it all the time anyway. You slap a face on a machine. Hell, even slap headlights on a car. And you're sometimes convinced that they have self-awareness and personalities. But that'll be for next time. For this time, I'd like to thank the Stealth Geek for letting us know what's going on as far as his podcast is concerned. I'd like to thank James Stubbs and Nerdcore Steve for writing in on this episode's topic, and sorry guys that it took so long for those to be read. I'd also like to welcome Nick Terrace to the forums. Nick Terrace has been a part of the forums for more than a month now and hasn't gotten an official welcome on the air, as it were. Last welcome Nick Terrace got was to the Frapper Map, and we thank her very much for that. So, welcome to the forums, Nick Terrace, and thank you very much for joining. There are other names that are appearing as new members, but they appear to be auto-generated. And I'm not going to welcome one or all of them until some kind of post is made or personal information is filtered out. I thought the software guarded against that kind of thing, but apparently it doesn't. So if you are a new member to the forums, please post something, and you'll get your official welcome in episode 39. All right. Episode 39, of course, will be the episode in which I explain why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until that one is aired or posted, I hope everything goes very well for you. And until then, best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.